Welcome back, everybody. Thank you for joining us here in the Members Hour, the second hour. We're talking with Daniel Updike, a.k.a. Wodenson from Northern Runes Radio. And we're having a very interesting conversation here in terms of where we're going in the application of Asatru in the 21st century. And you mentioned something very interesting right before we ended there in terms of the fight for our spirit or our soul. And maybe we can talk a little bit more about that. What do you mean when you say that? Because some people are probably going to just say, what are you talking about? What do you mean? We're still here. It's all good. We're trucking along, you know. But what's the essence of this aspect, Daniel, that if we don't kind of apply some of the things that we've been talking about and really, in reality, change our ways or adopt an older way, really, how we are being threatened? What's gonna happen to us? What is our fate if we just leave it up to the whims of those who seek to control our planet globally today, as opposed to taking destiny in our own hands and doing something about it?
Well, the main thing that is going to be a problem is that what is currently in existence right now as our greatest challenge will become insurmountable. And that is that we as a people do not know who we are. And that means that we as individuals do not know who we are. We know who people have told us that we are. Okay? And that, of course, is from the indoctrination that we receive in our Western societies. Through our school, through our peers, through our friends, and so on and so forth. But yet, that has nothing to do with our identity, either culturally or in terms of our folk soul, where we fit in. Because I was talking earlier about how we have a context as an individual, and that context being the folk soul or the collective consciousness of the entire Northern European ethnic group. And as a result of not knowing who we are, we end up having this view of ourselves that is so distorted that we are involving ourselves in futile attempts to fill this gap through searching out every other way but our own, and finding out that we really don't fit in there either, and our people are becoming less and less and less. We are at a negative population growth.
Yeah, that's right.
We are not a majority of the world's population.
No.
That's our goal anyway, but
by far, yeah.
We don't want to have a negative population growth. I mean, nobody survives that long. And as we were saying earlier, and I think you may have hit on this in our earlier part of our conversation, that when a person stops growing, they die.
Yeah.
When that struggle, and I was talking about this earlier too, that that eternal struggle to expand and to become something more than what we were, when that stops, when that growth stops, then decay sets in, and we're not, the whole process of the world and of the universe is that you die off, you are gone. You take a look at nature here, and here's an example that maybe some folks will understand a little bit better with what I'm talking about. Okay, we know that a star burns a certain amount of fuel throughout the course of its lifetime. And when it runs out of that fuel, it goes through its death cycle. And its death cycle ends up causing the destruction of all the planets that may have orbited it. And if there was any life there, that will be gone. If our sun were to go through that, where the process of its fuel was to run out, it would turn into a red giant that would incinerate our planet and then eventually turn into a small white dwarf star from what the astronomers tell us and astrophysicists and so forth. And well, we wouldn't be here to see that, but it would be a catastrophic event. And that's macrocosmic. That's universal. That's part of what we look at when we look at the largest aspect of the universe. The same thing happens with galaxies. Galaxies can die. We take a look at our mythologies, and our gods are not even immortal. They eat the apples of Idun in order to maintain their youthfulness. Otherwise, they grow old and die. We are no different. Okay? I believe very firmly that the universe, or the multiverse, or whatever you want to call it, is reflected in each human being, and it is reflected through the prism of the folk soul from of which that human being is a part. And we, if we don't begin to remember who we are and to connect with that again and connect with that ancestral stream and be able to pass that on to future generations, we have stopped that eternal struggle. We have stopped that growth process. We are in the decaying process. And we see this happening around us all the time, and a negative population growth, just as one example out of many, is catastrophic to us, because that means that at some point in time, if this is not reversed, if this does not stop, if we do not find out who we are, we will be a footnote in somebody else's history book.
Yeah.
And I, for one, don't want to do that. I don't want to be a footnote in somebody else's history book. I don't want to see my children and my children's children be part of a dying breed of people.
Who does? Okay? Who does? Who's healthy, right?
No, nobody does. And so we're fighting. And by this, you know, it's strong words and strong terminology. We're fighting for the souls of our people. Not that you have to even be Ozatru, but at least have a connection to the ancestors. At least have that connection living and alive in your life.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, because we're not out like the Christians to convert and proselytize people. But when people understand who they are, things naturally happen. Things naturally develop. I don't know how many times I've been told as the Golthi of Harshal Kindred that, you know, Ozatru is the name of something that I've been living all my life.
Mm, yeah.
And I just finally figured out what it was called.
Yeah.
And, you know, I always looked for something and I never fit in. All right. Until I found this, and all of a sudden I felt like I was home. I had one person come up and say to me, I'd never heard much about the Norse gods and goddesses. And of course they were talking about the Viking Age and so on and so forth, because the Viking Age is a lot more swashbuckling and exciting than going through all of the, you know, a lot of history that people don't have a lot of written about.
Yeah.
But they said, I felt like I knew these gods.
Mm, no.
And, you know, we got to get away from the idea that all's the true, or Ozatru, or Ford Seether, or any of the other types of names, Vanatru. There's name after name after name, modern inventions for most of it to differentiate between other groups that are out there. But the thing is that the energy behind it is where we find our place, where we fit in. And when you find that, it's empowering, and then that growth process starts again. And then there's that push forward to become. But it's not like the Western religions that we see today, where we're bowing down and you know, oh, we're unworthy sinners and we don't deserve anything but damnation. No. We are told in our lore and shown by the example of our ancestors that we are people that have a choice as to what we will do with our lives, and that we have the ability to make something of ourselves. It's up to us what we do with the gifts that we've been given. And if we have issues that are challenges that we have to overcome, then all the greater glory comes to us for overcoming those challenges.
Mm,
and yeah. the And the gods and the goddesses of our people do not demand us to bow down before them. They're clapping their hands and jumping up and down at each victory that their folk have.
Yeah.
All right?
Yeah.
You understand the visual I'm trying to put out?
Sure. Yeah.
They want us to become something more because they're on a path to become something more. And it's a disappointment.
Well, when we become something more, they become something more. That's the point.
Yes. And not only that, you know, we read about all these different religious persuasions in the pagan community, for instance, where they talk about guides and so on and so forth. And even in Buddhism, I think they talk about this and different religions that are out there. I know in the native traditions, they have, you know, totems or totem animal spirits or different things that will lead them along the way. Well, we have ours too. We had our vision quests. They used to call them Uthisitta, where a person would sit on a grave mound. And what were they doing sitting on the grave mound all night in their meditation? They were communing with the ancestors.
Yep.
Because the ancestors are our guides.
Yep.
What are the Disir? For many of you that are listening, you're probably, if you're not familiar with All's the Truth, wondering what these terms mean. Well, the Disir were the female ancestors that decided not to move on, but to watch over their families throughout the generation. Mm. You know, they were our guides. They were our help. Our ancestors gave bloat and gave honor to the spirits of the land and to the ancestors more often than they did to the gods. And a lot of people don't understand that. They don't realize that. They gave honor to the Alfar, to the whites of the land and of the sea and of the ancestries and of the different protective spirits that were considered to be a part of their family heritage that had been generationally passed on from one generation to the next. More often than they did the gods. They bloated the gods, most certainly, and they certainly gave honor to the gods and the goddesses, but it was for a different reason. They would give honor to the gods and the goddesses, and they would exchange, you know, with all of the different rites they would do, the gift for a gift principle, where they weren't sitting there begging that the gods would do something for them.
Right.
They were saying, if you do something for us, we'll do something for you. And, you know, whatever that might be.
Right.
And they were far more free in doing this with the ancestors and with the whites than they were with the gods, because all one has to do is read the saga of the Volsungs to understand the danger that's involved in accepting the gifts from gods.
Right. Right.
Sometimes the price is pretty high. But the thing is that it was all for a reason and all for the purpose of, you know, becoming something more than what we were. And we need to get that back again. That's what the fight for the soul is all about, because we want to reverse this trend, not just the negative birth rate, but, you know, the whole idea of decay that our present society sees our people in. So that we could be proud of ourselves once again, so that we can move forward once again, so that we can realize that, you know, no, we're not better than anybody else, but we're not the scum of the earth either. We are on equal footing with every other people that live in the world, and we will move forward and act with honorable actions, act with deeds of truth. Act with deeds that make a difference, not only for us, but for everyone. And do the things that our more recent Christian ancestors did not do. All right? Because our more recent Christian ancestors committed many dishonorable deeds. And I think in some ways we pay the price in weird for some of what they have done. But we can reverse that trend. And we can show the world that we are more than that, that that is not who we are. We have a 40,000 plus year history. We have something to offer. We have something to be a part of the puzzle, because I believe very strongly, and I've felt this in my spirit every time I do a broadcast, just so that you know, we never script our broadcasts on the NRR. I never know what my co-host is going to say. He never knows what I'm going to say. We just go, and we do it after we have meditated and we have invoked the gods, and we hope that that does something to touch and stir the souls of people, because we're moving forward in this conflict for the mind and for the soul, and to show the world that if we can become an example instead of viewing ourselves as a pariah, we can watch the whole world evolve. Because as every piece of the puzzle fits into its proper place, okay, I mentioned this in a very early broadcast on the Northern Runes Radio. If you were to take a look at a gigantic orchestra, and you were to listen to each person play their individual instrument, it would sound like a big mess. It would sound horrible. The tuba, you know, the trombone, the trumpet, the fiddle, or violin, or the drums, you know, by themselves, they sound weird when you see a bunch of people, if they're all doing their own thing. But when they're all playing the music that's put before them and playing their part in that symphony, okay, all of a sudden you have something that is amazing. And that's where evolution takes place for the whole world, backing up to the biggest picture that you can look at for humanity.
Right, right. Now, I wanted to ask you, how do you put this struggle in context to what I would say majority of people today are told, especially in school, but this comes through in philosophy, history, anthropology. There is a kind of a, I would really say that it's an anti-nature curriculum. It's a war even on human nature in these days. If we look at when cultural Marxism took over anthropology, when it became weaponized, it's kind of a preachment of a very anti-human nature in their anti-human ideology, where we're all the same. There's no differences between us. There is a kind of a pathological egalitarianism that leads to a suicidal tendency, if you ask me. And this is coupled with a resentment for our ancestors, that we look down on them, that they were somehow barbarians, or they were brutal, and that we are so much better than them today, and that this kind of in itself creates a kind of a self-hatred, that if you resent where you came from, and you look outside of that for role models of where to go or how to lead your life and everything else, then I think that, to me anyway, explains a lot of the situation that we're in, that there is a very very skewed and weird version that people view all this stuff, you know. And it's even, like you mentioned before, that, you know, who is healthy and sane, want to leave their children with a better opportunity than yourself. But even that within our political system is almost looked down upon now, that now that's seen as giving them an advantage or whatnot, that we're all meant to lower the bar for the lowest common denominator due to this kind of pathological egalitarianism. And again, when you take all these things together, it's something that absolutely clashes and goes in complete contradictory terms to what you just talked about. So how do you view that, and what people are taught today in school, and how they view ancestors and everything else? How do you view that, Daniel?
I view that as a load of lies. Now, even if let's take the position of the advocate of the opposite side here for just a moment. Let's say that humanity all started in one place. Okay, but here's something. We haven't had anything to do with the rest of humanity for 44,000 years. How many differences do you think would be engendered by that over that span of time?
Very, okay. Very, very much. Yeah, a lot.
And not only that, they can discover now through genetics, and it's through your mother's side, believe it or not. I don't know why it's not through the father's side as well, but through the mother's side of the DNA structure, they can, within, I think, 100 to 250 miles, determine where your ancestors lived and what tribe they were likely from.
Right.
Thousands of years ago. Because every part of the world has unique flora and fauna and different types of chemicals in the food. I'm not talking about like modern day pesticides or anything, but you know, sure, just the natural things that occur,
yep,
in plant life. And they are unique to from region to region. And the DNA records that. And just like your hair records every chemical you've ever ingested in your body. So they can actually discover within a couple of hundred miles where your ancestor from, say, 3,000 years ago lived.
Hmm.
And, you know, probably a lot further back than that, because the DNA keeps a record of that. And so, you know, this has nothing to do with whether or not ancestry is valid or not, but it has to do very much with the fact that they can discover much more now than what they could even 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
But this business of everybody's all the same, I'll tell you, I don't believe in that at all. It just does not make any sense to me. Although I know that it's something that pervades Western society. To give an example, when I worked in the trades, I would be very conscientious with my work, and I would work hard. I would get quite a bit of stuff done, and a lot of it in very difficult, awkward. And yet I would get no difference in my pay than the guy that did a few things and pretended to work and walked around all day. We got the same.
Yep.
There was no incentive to be anything more. And to lower the bar, no, that's, I think, as a result of a complex that people have in general, that they feel guilty about their success. And it has nothing to do with whether somebody's better as a person from one to the next, but I think it has everything to do with what effort they put into their life. And I believe very strongly that those that decide to put an effort into their life, that they're going to take seriously the things that are necessary to build a good life for themselves and their families, should be rewarded for that with the fruits of their labors.
Yeah.
And those that decide to sit on their backsides and watch television all day and not do anything should be rewarded with the fruits of their labors.
I agree.
And if they're going to sit there and complain about it, then they should get off the couch and go get a job. That's just my thought on it. I'm not trying to sit there and make value judgments against some people, because sometimes economic situations being what they are, I know that in the United Kingdom and in the EU, there are a lot of economic problems. And in the United States, there are a lot of economic problems. Here in Canada, we seem to be a little bit more insulated from that. But in a lot of places, there are no jobs, and there are things that, you know, people are suffering through very greatly. But that's where industriousness comes in, and a person can make their own job, and they can do something themselves. You know, they can do things for their neighbor. They can do things, you know, for their own business idea. and work at it. And if it fails, so what? Try something else. It's that industriousness and perseverance and never giving up. And, you know, why shouldn't people be rewarded for that? Why should the bar be lowered? It should be raised.
Exactly.
And, you know, but how do you do that when the entire Western civilization, and I don't know much about on the Eastern side of things, but in Western civilization, when people are indoctrinated to believe that the bar should be lowered, when they are indoctrinated to believe that there's no difference in ancestry, okay, or that that's somehow a racist comment, and it's not, you know, you have a battle to be won, and that battle is not about a war of words. And I think you hit the nail on the head that there's been too much moaning and complaining and argumentation between different people and different groups, saying this and saying that. We need to live our principles.
Yeah.
We need to live our ways.
That's right.
And it's when you touch the soul, and that's the part of a person that, well, I got to put this in a nutshell, because I know there's a lot of people that are listening that won't catch this, but I would say to them that we do have an episode on our Podbean server called The Northern Soul Complex, and I would suggest that every person listen to that because it talks very much in detail about the different parts of the soul, because our ancestors had a view of the soul that was only rivaled in its complexity by the ancient Egyptians.
Interesting.
Yes, yeah, some barbarians.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, they had a lot of knowledge, and they had a lot of ideas, and it wasn't just, you know, like they show you in the movies where they're drinking beer out of people's skulls. Okay. It wasn't like that. Our ancestors were very intelligent people, or we wouldn't be here. They had what it took to survive, or we wouldn't be here.
Yeah.
And we need to wake that part of the soul up. And that is the part that is beyond the five senses of the body. All right. We look around and we can see, hear, taste, touch, smell. You know, we can interact with our environment. But that does nothing when it comes to, you know, establishing a connection with the ancestors, or establishing a connection with the gods, or establishing a connection with, you know, the spirits of the land, because you don't see, touch, taste, feel. It's not the same way. It's another sense entirely. And it's that part of you, and you've experienced it, as well as every other human being on the planet, including every person of Northern European descent, where you have had that feeling. Let's say you've met somebody for the first time, and in your gut, you knew that something wasn't right, and you didn't know why, and you didn't know how, but you knew that something wasn't right. You decided to go against it, and you found out the hard way that something wasn't right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That was a sense that was a part of your soul. Okay. And that's what we're trying to stir. And that's what we're trying to stir, because once that becomes more aware, then that connection to the ancestors and to the gods and to the runes and to all of the different aspects of our people and our history starts to open up. And it becomes more than just some philosophy. It becomes what it originally was, and that was a way of life. In the soul complex of our ancestors, okay, the body, our physical form, was not considered separate from our soul. If you take a look at modern Western religion, they will talk about how you have a body, and when you die, your soul or your spirit goes to heaven or goes to hell or whatever theology that they might have. But it's separate. Our ancestors taught that the body was a part of a multi-layered soul complex and was no less important than the rest of it, but it wasn't the only thing.
Yep.
And when we look at that and we begin to understand that, things begin to open up. And all of a sudden, you know, when your awareness begins to open up, the fallacy of the Western indoctrinations begins to get exposed, because lies, when they are brought out into the light, are seen for what they are.
Yep, that's correct.
And so when I say, you know, we're in the battle for the mind, and we have many different topics that we talk about and so forth, that's what we're talking about. We're in the battle for the soul of our people. And we are heeding that call, because there really isn't that many out there that are heeding that call.
Not yet.
There are more.
Yes.
There are more and more, and we're going to see more and more.
Yeah.
I'm talking about, you know, like when we started what we were doing with the NRR, there wasn't any station out there that was doing what we're doing. And there was others out there that did a lot of entertainment and talked about all's it true in a very jovial type of way, but it was more or less just a regurgitation of this or a regurgitation of that. But it wasn't really something that was engineered for anybody other than someone who was an Ozitrar. And what we've tried to do is we've tried to keep that resource for Ozitrar people there, and at the same time reach out our other hand to those of our folk that have not yet awakened to who they are. And we want to see that growth happen, because we don't want to be a footnote in the history books of some other civilization. We want to be thriving once again. And I you know, as late as the hour is in terms of our ability to turn things around, I think there's still just a little bit of time left where we can succeed.
Yeah, well, exactly. Of course, it's never too late. There's still a lot of us, and it's just about a matter of awakening that kind of part of people. And I think that, you know, it's something that is part of our you know, kind of collective unconscious within the group, if you will, of the psyche that I think has developed over many of those thousands of generations, just as you talk about before there, in terms of where we are geographically on the planet and how we are, to a certain extent, isolated in these pockets, and how we live and the connectivity that we slowly but surely built up between a lot of these, you know, Northern European tribes and how we shared that experiences, or if it came from a source somewhere, and if we migrated to Northern Europe and then there, it kind of spread out, but the traditions, the values, the ideologies of you know, the gods and the goddesses kind of stayed and remained to a certain extent. But nonetheless, I believe that that's something that kind of have been shaped, and it's been refined over many, many thousands of years. And that's something to the point where it's ingrained not only in that collective unconscious, but even in our biology itself. It's part of our DNA, the fabric of life to a certain extent. And if one believes in such things as genetic memory, for example, I mean, then absolutely, of course, that's going to be part of you. Your the experiences of your ancestors even is going to be part of your own fabric. And that, maybe that's why, you know, maybe that's in the certain extent that we can explain kind of the gut feeling that you talked about before. You just know certain things. It's all, you know, all of it is resonating and saying, speaking to you, and it's just a matter of kind of listening to that. But what would you say to someone who has that kind of fundamental question then of okay, we have Ozitru over here. It has a certain, you can read about it and learn about it. There's tons of different groups out there, and they preach some variables and differences here and there. But the bigger question, I think, is still how do we bring that in then to the 21st century? How does one live? Because I at least have the feeling that it's not about a set of rules to that extent that you need to follow to the T with various rituals. And, you know, as you said before, it's not about bowing down to any of the gods or anything. It's more a way of life that you can implement whatever you're doing at this stage. It doesn't matter if you're a stockbroker or if you're a carpenter. or even if you're unemployed, right? It's like whatever you're doing, the nine noble virtues can be applied to anything. It's a way of life more than a set of rules to follow. But what do you think are the main components of that? What would you say for someone who is interested in starting to live in this way in our modern times, Daniel?
Well, first of all, it's not like Christianity or any of the other religions that are out there in the Western world. It's not a matter of converting to some set of beliefs. It's making a decision to be an Ausatar. And then in making that decision, understanding that, you know, there's things you're going to need to work on in your life, but they're not things that you didn't have to work on before. You know, you work on the traits of honesty and of honor and also of a good work ethic, working on how you relate to your family, working on how you treat your wife, because realize that the view our ancestors, our pre-Christian ancestors had of women was certainly a lot different than in the post-conversion era.
Oh, yeah. Very much.
Women were not considered somehow lower than men. And those that may be listening that are women realize that there were women jarls.
That's right. Yep.
Who were rulers. And they, you know, shield maidens, and some of them were great warriors.
That's right.
You know, it was Christianity that brought the divine right of kings, and that, you know, wives obey your husbands in the Lord. There was none of that. I got a kick, although there's a lot of inaccuracies in it. It's more accurate than some of the video series that have been out there, but History Channel came out with a series called The Vikings.
Yeah, I've been following it. It's quite interesting, actually. They managed to get some good stuff in there. Some things, as you said, are, of course, inaccurate, but nonetheless, it's fun watching it. They did a good job.
I got a kick out in season one. Ragnar had promised his wife that she would be able to come with him on the next raid they made into England. And he reneged on it because of certain circumstances that were beyond his control, but she was mad. And so she came at him with a sword, and he came at her with a shield, and they're busy, you know, basically destroying the interior of their household. And he's getting his backside kicked half the time. And all of a sudden, his son pops his head down. What's going on? And then in a calm and, you know, serene voice, his father says, "Don't worry, son. Your mother and I are simply having a disagreement."
That's right. Yep.
You know, women were not considered less than men. That's the point I'm trying to make.
Yep.
And the thing is, when you're bringing this into the 21st century, it's not about, you know, whether you have feasts and do all kinds of different things that makes you an Ausatar. It's your way of life that makes you an Ausatar. If you want to, and I would encourage that you would make, you know, spiritual offerings to the gods and goddesses and to the whites, you know, give them something that's of value to you once in a while. You know, our ways were so simple. You know, the farmer would take some of the wheat that he had harvested from his farm and leave it out under a tree so that the whites could enjoy some of it.
Yeah.
Not that they would eat any of it, but you know, it was the thought that counted.
Yeah.
That you gave something that was of worth to you. And the gift for a gift principle, they then would watch over you. And it was a very symbiotic relationship. And it was the same when they dealt with one another. It was like an extension of that because, you know, yes, the Jarl you mentioned would give rings to many of the loyal people who were in his area as a sign of generosity, but that wasn't free. the gift or a gift principle was also, if you accepted that ring, you also accepted the fealty to that Jarl, that your loyalty would continue. And, it was a principle of Frith. What was Frith? Frith was that if one member of the family or one member of the tribe received a great victory, then the entire family and the entire tribe shared in the glory of that victory. If one of the members of the family committed a dishonorable deed, then the entire family and tribe shared in the shame of that deed. And if there was a weregild to be paid, which was a fine that was imposed for a criminal act, it wasn't just the head of the family that paid that. Every member of the entire family had to contribute to it.
Right.
And then it was given to the other family as an apology for what they had done.
So it's kind of a way of extending your own choices and decisions and actions in the world to in a larger circle. And of course, this is as a way of kind of thinking twice about what you're doing or what you're saying. And this consequently, hopefully, will lead to somewhat of a better behavior, if we can put it that way.
Yes, and a better memory of who you are. We are our deeds, because our deeds come from our hearts and our thoughts. And, you know, a lot of people say, you know, let's give an example of somebody who committed horrible crimes and ends up in prison for the rest of their life. Well, you know, they did some really bad things, but they're not a bad person. Our ancestors would very badly disagree with that.
Yeah,
and say he or she did that because that what was in their heart to do. And so...
Yeah, or it's external circumstances all the time. We see this today, even with criminals or what have you. It's like, no, it's due to how they were brought up, or they didn't have enough money, and that's why they did all the things they did. You know,
a lack of taking responsibility for one's actions.
Yes,
and that's one of the key notes. That's one of the. It is along with the gift for a gift principle, the key note of what Ozichu is. Because you're taking responsibility for your life, because you're realizing that you're not predestinated into anything. Your life is going to be what you make it to be with your own two hands. And if you are waiting for somebody else to make your life for you, well, who says that they won't, but it won't be yours.
Yep. That's
right. And, you have the ability to make whatever you want of yourself as long as, you know, you take your gifts and your weaknesses into consideration and do what's necessary to make it happen. And it's a way of life. Honoring the gods and the goddesses, there's no Bible that tells you got to do this or that. You do what's in your heart to do when it comes to that. You can be solitary, or you can be a part of a fellowship or a kindred, as they call it, which is kind of like a tribe that has been created. And by that I mean a group of people that have decided to practice Ozichu together and honor the gods, goddesses together. But again, there's no hard and fast rules as to how that is done. And, you may decide that, for instance, on Wednesday, Woden's Day, that you're going to honor Woden because this was a day named after him. And so you take a sip of your bottle of ale and pour the rest of it on the ground and say, Hail Odin. You just committed a religious rite. That is something that would have been meaningful even in the time of our ancestors.
Yep.
It's not about going and reciting some fancy prayer 45 times. It's about what comes from your heart. And read and study the lore of the ancestors. Read the sagas, read the stories, read the prose Edda, read the poetic Edda, which is the Elder Edda, read the history of the Danes, read the Anglo-Saxon chronicles, read about Swedish history, read about German history. Why? Because you want to get a snapshot into what your ancestors' world was like.
Yeah, and you also want to see what they did, again, their deeds and the battles and the hardship that they went through and what they struggled with, again, in order to enable you to be here today. What I mean, because I've noticed that as well, that it was really it's really a lack of history that has that also consequently gives you the lack of appreciation for your ancestors. You simply don't know anything. That's it. And again, why is it so little learned about this specifically? You know, I can only talk from my own point of view here, but in you know, the Swedish schooling system, for example, and history, and it's very an avoided area overall. I don't know how it is today in these days, but I figured it would be even less in, you know, today and what kids learn. But when you begin to read about it, when you begin to realize the enormity of the battles that was fought, you know, even between the tribes and over territory, just realizing how much bloodshed was you know, lost in tribal wars between the Danes and the Swedes over certain areas, you know, and then you realize today it's like just kind of handed out. It's just not there's no veneration for what was sacrificed to keep the territory and to fight over it and things like that. It's when you realize that all the history and everything that's been going on, and the more you read, the more you learn, the more this awakens something within you, and you start to feel that you know, connection. That's something that I went through, you know, literally in the last few years or so, as I was reading more and more and more and more about it. I realized it's like, wow, it's just, the history is amazing, and there's so many, you know, amazing, fantastic, and tragic you know, things that have occurred, and to not know about this, to just ignore it is a crime, you know, almost in my view. It's horrible, you know.
Oh, it is. It is, absolutely, because you're missing out on the tales of your ancestors. And that was one of the things that our ancestors wanted most of all, was that somebody would sing a song or tell a story about their lives. And of course, we know that myths are not literally true, and some of the histories are embellished a little bit. But that was for memorability, because their television was stories.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't have all the fancy stuff that we have today. You know, we would make the same complaint, you know, that the movie didn't seem exactly like the book.
You know? Right, yeah.
You know, but it was memorable.
Yeah.
And it was the spirit of the story. It was the message that the story contained. That was the key. And if a person understood the Skaldic poetry and how that was, you know, used to engage so many parts of the mind, a person would realize that not only, and the Skaldic poets would take great pride in this, by the way, not only would there just be this surface story told about what King so-and-so did, or what Jarl so-and-so did, or what this peasant did, but there would be a underlying message to that story that would show you the spirit of what the ancestors had in that time through the severity of the conditions in which they lived.
Yeah.
That, you know, and that's so powerful, because they didn't have heated houses. They didn't have all the fancy stuff that we've got now. They didn't get in their Volvo and drive somewhere.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
it was a struggle. It was, every day was a struggle for life and survival, you know?
Yeah. They walked, or they rode a horse if they had lots of money.
Yeah.
But more oftentimes they didn't. And so they walked.
Yeah.
And, you know, they traversed great distances. They got in those open canoes that they called ships. I don't know if you know what a canoe is, but
sure. Yeah, of course.
been on choppy waters on a lake in a canoe, and was not all that impressed. I can only imagine what it was like being in one of those long ships.
Right.
When a hurricane all of a sudden comes up, because they had them. And that took a lot of kahunas to be in one of those.
Yep.
Although they were the fastest ships of the day. But the thing is that, you know, we miss out on these stories. It's buried by popular culture because of the way the indoctrination is in Western society that we've been talking about. And what we're trying to do is reverse that trend. And when somebody wants to be an Ozitrar, they are deliberately reversing that trend. They are deliberately seeking out these things because these stories still exist. These stories are still available. These stories are still a part of who we are. And there's a resonation that happens when a person, again, with that soul awareness starting to open up, begins to read and study and see who they really are instead of who they've been told they've been. You know,
it becomes
a powerful force. And that's what we want to see happen. And we're starting to see that happen more and more. In North America, we're starting to see it happen more and more, too. And we've been shocked at some of the things that have been going on because, you know, people are starting to realize en masse in some places that, you know, all of the trappings of Western society as it exists today and the religions that they've been told to believe in and even atheism itself, which some have turned to, has not filled the void in their hearts. And they still are looking and they hear something. I don't know how many times I've had a message come to me where somebody has heard a broadcast or seen one of our YouTube channel videos. And they sit there and say, I've never heard anything like this before. I'm so glad I found this. It's not that we're anything. We're trying to do something. And it's the battle that we're concerned about. I don't care if they listen to the NRR personally or they listen to somebody else. As long as they're listening to the message that does something that touches their soul.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'll support anybody that does that.
Well, I mean, look at the immense... You mentioned something about the TV, for example. I've thought about this for, you know, some time now. Look at the incredible technology that we have to our disposal, but look at the poor quality of the stories that we're trying to tell with this amazing technology. I mean, sure, there has been a couple, and I'm going to be, you know, Northern European centric here, but nonetheless, we do have a couple of versions of Beowulf that have been made. One of them I liked. I wasn't too much impressed by the animated version, but nonetheless, it was made. You have kind of a poor, low quality version of the Nibelung that was made, the ring about Sigurd, you know, and that important story. And then you, have more recently the Vikings with Ragnar Lothbrok that has been kind of getting out there a little bit. But beyond there, I mean, there is an incredible archives of stories here to pour into. And I'm just amazed that we haven't seen more of this yet. And the realization here, of course, is that we need to take back control of our culture through the storytelling. This is how you control and awaken people to it. And I think the more people, you know, realize what our past is about, that's also when you realize that this is something that not only needs to be preserved, it actually needs to be defended and kept up and continued into our age, you know. But I think a large problem here in this kind of dilemma that we're talking about is the storytelling bit, that, you know, take these stories and produce them in some way. I mean, even to a certain extent, if it's a low quality, low budget at this stage, just to kind of awaken that. And it would be wonderful if there were sponsors who realized this, who could go in with money here or invest in it, just like in a big, you know, Hollywood production or something like that. But my God, it's like, if that floodgate could be opened, I think a lot more people would be pouring back into it. I mean, even as awful as Thor is, the movie, I just couldn't even stand watching the second one. But despite all that, they're at least doing something. I mean, it's very skewed and it's kind of, you know, not really written for those purposes. But the Vikings is a good example, I guess, that there are actually people who are returning to it and realizing it due to what they see on the TV. Right? Would you agree with that?
I would. And of course, there are some things that are a little inaccurate in Vikings. But out of all the productions I've seen, it's the one that stays the truest compared to a lot of the others.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is based on the saga of Ragnar Lothbrok, as far as I know. And he was a great man. And why not tell a story about such a person? And, you know, we look at history, and history was written by the victors, of course, and little wonder when the conversion process was completed and hundreds of years had passed since that conversion process was completed that our history would start to be vilified. We were, you know, from the stock of barbarians. And the truth of the matter is we were anything but. You know, all you have to do is look at something like the Uthbert sword.
Yeah.
And, you know, you take a look at the technology that it took to create that blade that others in Europe did not have for hundreds of years.
I think it was 800 years or something.
Yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, the people that were mindless barbarians wouldn't create such things.
No.
You take a look at some of the intricate carvings. And unfortunately, a lot of the carvings in the runic carvings were done on wood, which rots away.
Yeah.
But you take a look at some of the ones that were done on the stones. And I don't know if you've ever carved anything before, but to carve in a stone isn't easy.
No, it takes a lot of effort and time. But there actually is a rune carver here in Sweden now. His name is Kalle, or Carl for Kalle for short, but Carl. And he, I don't know what his website. I think it's rune carver, but in Swedish it's runristare.se. And I think that he actually has kind of picked up this lost art again and started to do it. And I watched some of the videos that he was in and carving it, and it's a time consuming task, and you realize when you see some of this that great, you know, thought and careful you know, procedure that it was to sit and put the time and effort in at a time when, of course, your primary duty was to survive. But nonetheless, I think they realized at a certain point there as well, Daniel, that they were writing on birch paper, they were indeed writing on wood and different things, but this is something that started to decompose over time. And that's why I think it's fairly late in the process that you actually, if the dating is correct, but that you actually see the when the stones starting pop up, which is around, I think about around 700 and onwards, something like that. But I think that they've been using this writing style for many, many hundreds of years prior to them carving it in stone.
Yes, I would tend to agree. The fact is that so many things have been lost, but we can keep hope alive and keep this moving forward by all the things that we can acknowledge that have been preserved. And we can look at this and say, you know, yes, there's many things that we can't really recreate because it was destroyed, or it did rot away, or it was done away with during the Christian conversion process. But there's been enough that has survived all of these different things that we can still rebuild our ways and walk in them with the same spirit that our ancestors had and with our connection to our ancestors intact. If I'm making any sense here.
Yeah, definitely. Yep.
And, you know, this is the thing. Is also true as it is practiced today in as many forms exactly like it was back before the Christian era? No, it is not. I'm not going to sit here and say, yes, it was. No, there are differences. But like we've already said, there was no Bible. There was no book of holy writings that like the Ten Commandments or something that told us that we had to do things this way or that way. It is a living and evolving religion.
Yes.
And we have enough of the lore that was left to us by the very people that tried to destroy it, that we can reconstruct and have reconstructed, I believe, a very valid way of expressing that ancestral root in our modern world.
Yeah.
And you decide to be an Ozatrar, you choose to study and read what histories and stories, and we call that the lore. That's what we mean by the lore. For those of you that might not have known what I meant when I said that, because I don't know who's going to be listening to this. The history, the stories, the mythologies, understanding them as far as possible, and living in honor and truth and perseverance and hospitality, and in that industrious attitude that no matter what gets in our way, we're going to keep going and we're going to figure out a way to get past it instead of just giving up, that takes pride in oneself and one's actions, and to have something to pass on to our children, and to tell the stories of our ancestors to our children, and to tell the stories of our deeds to our children. Think in your mind what your grandchildren will say about you.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, have that, and you're gaining the spirit of what Ozatru is all about. And I think this is something that maybe will clear the waters for some who have never heard of what Ozatru is, and understand that there's a stirring in the soul, that part of you that is not a part of the five senses, that part of you that's in your gut, that you know that you're on the right path.
Yeah.
And that you are home, where you belong. And that connection is that you have with the ancestors is that same feeling in your gut. All right.
Yeah.
And you trust that and you go with it, and you find out that you're living in the modern world in the 21st century, the very same principles that your ancestors that lived in the time even of the Romans lived in.
That's right, exactly. You know, and how will you be remembered? You know, what deeds will your children and their children and their children know you by? You know, how will you be remembered? What did you do? What kind of process of this fight for the spirit of our people were you involved in at a time like this? Did you, you know, sit around on your ass doing nothing all day, or were you out there actively trying to do something about it, changing, talking about it, influencing people, trying to spread it? You know, this is what we're trying to get people to a point of where they feel that they need to participate in this. They need to be part of it. They need to, you know, do everything they can to reawaken this. And again, live, in some cases, it's all about just living as a role model, as an example of one who is stable and balanced and is good at what they're doing. They take pride in whatever, you know, task they're performing, and you try to do well in everything that you can. And I mean, that's really important in these times, I think. And I think that people will be attracted to that, and they would want to know, all right, what is this person doing? What do they do differently than everyone else? Why are they, you know, successful, or why are they good at this, what they're doing, whatever. And in that capacity, that will be like an advertisement, you know, for living in this way, I believe, right?
I believe so too. Like we've said this on the station plenty of times, and that is that if you want to sit and moan about all the problems, you're never going to get anywhere. You have to be the solution. And that's the key to success. You got to be the solution.
Yeah, yeah.
And if we're not willing to do that, if we're not willing to pay the price for that, then we're not going to win. And we have to be willing to set aside the indoctrinations that we have, experienced. We've all experienced it, and be the solution. And I think that's the key to victory right there. That's the spear of All Father right there.
Absolutely. Very good. Now, we're going to wrap up things here in a little bit, Daniel. We've covered, quite a bit, but as usual, there's always so much more to talk about. And I hope we can obviously stay in contact, have you back again and continue and pick up and talk more about these, nuances and components and discuss everything that is entailed within, also through and maybe even talk about the runes a little bit more at some point and talk about the force or the spirit behind using the runes and how people can imply that. That's a whole nother area, which is really, fascinating in itself. But I do want to leave you, I want you to leave us with the last few words that you might want to give out. If there's something you want to mention to our audience. If not, please give us your website, of course, and all the details of where people can go to follow your work.
Well, I will leave your listeners with this, and that is that you are worth something. All right? No matter what you've heard, no matter what you've been told, no matter what anybody has shown you through whatever educational process that's out there, you are worth something. Your ancestors lived and died so that you would know that you are worth something. And it's time for you to wake up to who you are and to remember them. Because when you do that, you're going to find your whole life revolutionized. You can listen to us, as basically this is the battle we're engaged in, simply by going to northernrunesradio.com or nrr.podbean.com, either one of those websites. And you can follow us, subscribe to RSS, and you can join and help us. Because no one can do this alone. We need to work together. And, same with Red Ice Radio. We support them, and we support what they're doing. You should be listening to their broadcasts, too, because they're trying to make a difference. And I look at all kinds of places that are springing up everywhere that are trying to make a difference. And you can be a part of that too. You can be a part of that by making a choice. And with that, I will leave you for this day and say hail and wassail. May the gods speak to your heart.
Hail indeed. Thank you so much, Daniel. We definitely support you guys as well, and we'll stay in touch and do more shows down the line here. And I urge everyone to check out northernrunesradio.com. Check out the other links that we'll have up as well, where you can get more of Daniel Updike's work here. Very good, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you, Daniel. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you very much for having me.
All right, there you go, folks. That's our program for today. We have coming up Gordon Kennedy, Nora Gedgaudas, Patrick Henningsen, David Eberhard, the Joy Camp guys, Kai Merles, and many, many more after this. Thanks to all our members. We appreciate you guys and gals so much. We'll be back in just a few. Until then, stay brave, continue to shine the light of truth on the lies that you see with bravery, honor, and dignity. Thank you so much for listening. We'll talk to you soon.